This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast and our review of freaking Die Hard. It's classic, son. My name is Wayne.
Classic review time. My name is Paul. And let's get straight into it then for this review of the 1988 action classic. I've said that word three times
already. I'm sure it's classic.
Because it is classic. It's amazing. Directed by John McTiernan. Screenplay by Jeb Stuart and Stuart E. D'Souza. Based off the novel Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe.
I didn't know that.
Sucks dick. Really? The novel is fucking terrible.
Wow. Okay.
It's 132 minutes long. The budget was somewhere between 25 and 35 million, never been confirmed.
Amazing.
And it took about 140 million worldwide, creating the franchise that we now know and love because every film got better after this. No. This is the high point. And of course, it all has bottomed out with some terrible, what was it? A Good Day to Die Hard from about 5 or 6 years ago. Just utter pants.
Is that so? Hang on, just before we get into it, of the Die Hard sequels,
yeah,
which is your least terrible?
Three.
Really?
Die Hard with Vengeance.
With Sam Jackson?
Yeah.
Huh.
And that's not terrible. That film's fine. It's actually pretty good. I think two's fine.
I didn't mind two. I kind of like two.
But four is eh.
Is that Die Hard 4.0? Like the
Live Free or Die Hard.
Timothy Oliphant?
Yeah, Timothy Oliphant's a bad guy.
Yeah, did you hear?
And then number five is just Jai Courtney killing yet another franchise.
Oh, yeah, that one where his son was fucking grown up and shit with Jai Courtney. Yeah, it was shit. Yeah.
All right, Wayne, tell us what Die Hard is about. And warning, there will be spoilers throughout for a film that's 32 years old.
You've all seen this, yes. Or if you haven't, you should.
Yeah, what are you listening to this podcast for if you haven't seen this film, for crying out loud?
D to the Hard, yo. It's about NYPD cop John McClane, Bruce Willis, who goes on a Christmas vacation to visit his wife Holly in Los Angeles, where she works for the Nakatomi Corporation. They're a little estranged, but things are kind of on a knife edge there. Anyway, while they're at the Nakatomi headquarters for a Christmas party, a group of robbers, led by Hans Gruber, Alan Rickman, looking cool as fuck, they take control of the building and they hold everyone hostage, with the exception of John McClane, because he escaped because he's John McClane, okay? While they plan to perform this lucrative-ass heist, right? John McClane can't escape and has no immediate police response, so he's forced to become a complete badass and fuck up the terrorists to try and save everyone. That's the movie. Boom. Die Hard!
Thank you very much for joining us. Audible. No, all right. Well, look, clearly this is a big favorite around these parts.
Huge, huge. It may have been one of the stories that Paul and I got together on. You know what I'm saying? Like, we became friends because we understood Bruce Willis was cool like this.
We did. And did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone were originally offered the role?
You're kidding.
Would have completely changed this film, wouldn't it?
Not, imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger is married to a woman with really bad hair. Okay. And like he walks in, it would have been a bit like Total Recall, where it's like, this guy is abnormally muscular, but I'm trying to buy him as a normal guy.
Yes, you know exactly. I mean?
And Sly would have just been too short.
Yeah. the film I should have mentioned stars, other than Bristol. Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber, one of the great all-time villains ever made. Alexander Grunov as the right-hand man slash physical nemesis for Bruce in the film.
That Thor-looking motherfucker?
And Bobby Bedelia, who, as you mentioned, had some of the worst hair ever put to film.
Just the worst. Just the worst. And who's the token Asian guy that's in every 80s action movie?
Al Yong.
Al Yong. Now, does that mean this movie gets an Al Yong bonus?
It does. We have discussed this.
As if it needed it.
It doesn't need any bonuses, but it gets it here, which puts it very close to going over the top. All right, look, where do you want to start with this movie? I think the everydayness of Bruce Willis, okay? So he was on a show you loved, Moonlighting.
Absolutely. I loved Bruce Willis before this, man. It was big news when he came out and do this as well.
He was paid $5 million for this role, which was an unheard of figure at the time. In a budget, remember, of 25
of money,
to 35 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
In 88.
That's like getting $15 million today.
Yeah, I don't know. The inflation calculator right in front of me, couldn't tell you for
11.2,
sure.
11.2, I don't know.
But that's somewhere between 1/5 to 1/7 of the budget went into Bruce Willis's pocket.
But why? He was just the Moonlighting guy. He was David Addison.
I know.
He must have tested well. He must have tested well. You know what? The idea that David Addison, it's like Bill Murray all of a sudden becoming Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's how big the jump was.
Michael Keaton becoming Batman?
Yeah.
Around the same time.
Baptism
right?
of Fire, 89. Yeah, oh, shit on me.
So
okay.
There was something going on here in Hollywood at this particular stage.
Did you buy him as an everyman, though? Or did you buy him? Yeah, I think it was that, wasn't it? Because he was the Moonlighting guy, he could be the everyman. Well, he's probably a bit good looking to be the, you know.
Yeah, he's a good looking bloke, but he wasn't
huge.
But
not exactly.
And like you said, Arnold Schwarzenegger also is still in muscular.
Yeah.
And he's out of his element the entire time. He's never He never seems like he's wholly in control through this film. It's almost That's like true. Luck and good measure plays a big part in his success in this movie.
I would agree, because he's got no shoes. Mm-hmm. He's got a dad bod going on. I mean, it's fine, but he's wearing the white singlet, you know?
Yeah, which is accentuating that whole dad bodness.
Exactly, which is tough to pull off, let me tell you.
Because otherwise, they wouldn't have stuck him in that if they wanted him to be, like, heroic. You know what I mean?
And I
would have him in combat boots.
But don't some people think that whole singlet thing is heroic? It's kind of like...
Not the white Bonds one.
No,
it's got to be, you know...
I suppose you have to be more muscular. I get that. I know what you mean. You know what? I was thinking when I was watching this movie again, I was sitting there going, how am I going to enjoy this again? Like, what's going to be good about it? Is it the nostalgia?
Are you saying it doesn't have rewatchability?
Oh, it has total rewatchability because I put it on and I thought maybe I just sat there and watched the whole thing. All right, because I'm like, yeah, because this is great. From the fucking Run DMC at the beginning with the Argyle, right? All that sort of shit.
Fist with your toes,
right? So the 80s, the first thing I'm looking at is like, oh, the 80s. You can wear a concealed weapon on a commercial flight. No problem at all, right? You can smoke in airports, cars, limos, and planes, right? Then your boss catches you doing blow on someone else's office desk and he doesn't even get mad. Nakatomi walks in on fucking Ellis and he's like, and everyone knows he's fucking doing blow, but he's like, yeah, so anyway, this guy's here. You can even bang your secretary at the office Christmas party.
That's right. There was someone doing that, wasn't there?
There was.
That was the obligatory...
I don't know if it was his secretary, but someone was fucking someone in someone's office. That would get you fired, although I do know someone who's done that.
Ooh.
Not recently, within the last 10 years in my work.
Ooh.
It was my boss.
Ex-work. Yeah, we should hasten to add.
Yeah, sorry. It was many jobs ago, and you don't know which one, but basically he said to me, my boss goes to me, I think I was about 25 and he's 35, and he goes, yo, I fucked my wife in the director's office on his desk.
Oh, his wife. Okay.
Yeah.
That's better than a secretary.
It was pretty good.
Or, you know, someone underneath your staff.
Anyway, sorry. Yes.
So, getting off the topic here, look, this film is just fantastic from go to work. It's perfectly paced. I said it was 132 minutes. This film feels like 90.
I would agree. Is it 132?
It flies by. Because it's just enough time to get the sense of Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia. That their tension between them, like you said, mm-hmm. It's really well played. Like, you know, they establish it well with Argyle. So she came out here, you thought she was going to fail and come running back to you.
That does give the character more complexity, doesn't it? If he just had this great wife that he loves, that's not that interesting.
It doesn't work. Yeah. The whole story doesn't work, because otherwise, why is fucking LA? Come out to the coast, get together, work your laughs.
And also, when she goes, that's John. Only John can make someone that crazy. It's because she knows he's a cunt. So that's why. That it has to have that. You're right. That's important.
So that's all great. And also Ellis's character, where you get established, like you said.
Ellis.
And the boss of the whole joint and how he's very refined and very controlling, but he seems like a good boss. Really good bloke.
Exactly. Plus he's Japanese. Now remember in the 80s, how Japan was to us in the 80s? Sushi was a thing in the 80s. It became like a thing, all right? Japan, the culture, Steven Seagal going to Japan.
It was mysterious.
Wasn't the Orient. I don't know, but yeah, that it was. Japan was the cool thing. So I think in the 80s, having this stoic Japanese leader thing, like this efficient guy.
He's stoic, but efficient. I think that's the right word. He's very...
Yeah, but then when he gets dusted, it's like, oh, shit on me. You know what I mean? Because, by the way, spoilers.
I've already given the spoiler warning at the start. And then we get two other side characters who are pivotal in this film, and that's one of them is Al Powell, Sergeant Reginald Bell Johnson.
Yeah.
Who's that dynamic between he and John is just fantastic in the film, the way it plays out over their radio communications through the course of the film.
Totally. And that becomes a thing. Family Matters, that guy, he comes in, he's like, because he's out of shape and this and that and whatever. But that was definitely cool.
Twinkies, pack of Twinkies. They're for my wife.
Exactly. By the way, he's in that shitty Crocodile Dundee movie that just got released on Amazon.
Oh, poor Reginald.
And he mentions it. He goes, hey, I Die Hard. People still like me.
I do still like him on the basis of
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely.
Forget being Family Matters dude. This is the film that sells him. And then Paul Gleason as Dwayne T. Robinson, the LAPD deputy chief. Who's like the most incompetent fucking head of anything ever.
I only just realized he's the Breakfast Club guy.
Yeah.
The teacher. Yep. Yeah.
And then finally, William Atherton as Richard Thornburg, the asshole reporter who's giving information
that's
going to get them ultimately into trouble. So it's a complex for this kind of film.
Now that I think about it, I didn't even think of those characters, but I remember watching Ellis. You mentioned Ellis, right? And I'm like, wow, he's playing that douche thing up to 11, man. He's like this, you know, hey Hans, booby, hey. I'm like, you're a dickhead. But it worked so well. I remember watching going, I hate that guy.
Hans, booby.
I'm your white knight. And then the stupid smile.
So, yeah, that so many memorable characters, so many memorable moments, mm-hmm. such awesome action.
I will tell you this, right? Towards the end of the film, Bruce Willis catches Alan Rickman, right? Gets the drop on him. Alan Rickman goes...
About halfway through, isn't it?
Is it halfway through? Yeah. Yeah, it's about halfway through. Alan Rickman goes and does this wicked thing where he pretends he's a hostage and goes, ah,
Bill Clay,
yeah. And he does an American accent. Now, I will say that when I watched it as a child, his American accent was much more impressive. I was like, oh my God, he just turned into who he is. But now that I watch it again, I'm like, that's not actually a very good American accent. It's all right. It's fine. But that was still really cool. And I think that whole scene between like Hans and fucking Bruce Willis
and John,
they're talking and it's like, they're sort of like spilling all, like he's spilling secrets and this is who I am. And everyone's fake bonding over a cigarette. Oh, they are fake bonding over a cigarette. And then he gives him that gun. And I'm like, oh shit, he gave him a gun. But then you realize he was doing it to test him. He gave him an empty gun. I'm like, oh, Bruce Willis is clever again. It's cool. He can be the hero. That was cool. Like
a dog, and then dong, the elevator opens up and then all the other dudes come in. You were saying.
Now, here's the problem with that, right? As soon as he knew he was, like, remember, Bruce had a fucking machine gun on him.
Should have killed him.
Should have just gone, oh, you were saying, well, I'm going to kill your ass.
Then run.
Then I'm going to, yeah, exactly. So that would have, that's the only problem, but it wouldn't have been much of a movie without it. It's fucking great.
No, I mean, the ultimate death for Hans is great, but he gets so many moments to shine. Some of his lines of dialogue are just awesome.
Hans?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Was it the suit thing? It's like, I have two myself in the drill. You know? Like, that's from fucking
Takagi
cool.
Suit.
Takagi suit. Yeah, that's it.
I have fucking two myself.
That was so cool. I remember going, that motherfucker's cool as shit. If you was a gangster, that's the one you want to be.
I can't remember exact line here, so I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, regretfully, Takagi did dodge his dot, so he will not be joining us.
For the rest of his life. Yeah, that was fucking, that was harsh as well. This is good shit, man.
And when Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept. For there were no more worlds.
Only Alan Rickman is selling that shit. If you pull that shit anywhere, I'm like, you
Alan Rickman and me,
please?
Motherfucker.
Yeah, okay. Man. Look, next time we do a heist, you drop that shit. I'll tell you if it works.
Hot damn! Next time, good, very good. What's your favorite action scene?
Action scene. Look, because most people go to the jump off the building with a fire heist, right? That was great, and it was at the time the first thing that we had seen.
Oh, it was the centerpiece of the trailer.
Yes.
40 short stories of sheer adventure.
Yeah, and I actually forgot whether they blew up the whole building or just the top. Turns out it was the top. But yep. I think probably... what is the best action scene? It was probably where he was fighting Thor. Remember when they were doing... No, but then again, I watched it again and it wasn't... When he finally drops him off the stairs and he hangs him from the... It wasn't that event. It wasn't this amazing move he did that got there. He just kind of chucked him. And I was like, oh, okay, 80s. You can do that in the 80s.
Well, again, remember, he's not... He's a New York City cop. Sure, he's got training, basic training, whatever else, and he can fire a gun, and he does. But he's not a superhero. He's not. At no point does it mention he's a grandmaster in any martial art or anything like that. He's a street fighter at best.
Yeah.
And so there isn't any great, amazing, like, whoa, Jet Li, Jackie Chan type moves. It's not meant to be.
That's true. But the one, okay, so then the bit that I remember looking at this time, right? Okay, so obviously at the end, he's got an empty machine gun. Comes out with that limp of his, right? And then Hans is there.
Hans!
Yeah, Hans! Hey, honey! Right? He throws the gun away because he knows it's empty anyway. And I'm looking at the gun he has taped to his back, which is his Beretta or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching, I'm going, that gun is taped way too far down your back to be effectively reachable. That's the first thing I thought. I didn't notice until now. But when he finally grabs it, he's only got two rounds left. Bang, bang, right? That was probably my favorite because that's an impossible shot to make. That's almost superhuman. Being able to reach that gun, whip it out, boom, boom, before two guys who have guns on you, bench to boot. Nah, that's cool though. Yeah. I wanted that. I wanted him to do that at the end.
So and he shoots Hans and he
and
falls.
Huey Lewis, yeah?
Yeah, that's not Huey Lewis.
He's so Huey Lewis. Everyone calls him Huey Lewis.
I didn't know that.
The Huey Lewis character, yeah.
And he staggers back, falls out when it grabs on, is holding on to Bonnie.
Yeah, yeah.
And just her arm and
by
the watch.
The watch. Yep. Which the Rolex.
Yeah, the one that Takagi gave her mm-hmm. for doing such a good job. You know, so that's interesting as well. But you've heard the story then about that moment when he falls and that...
Yes. Dun, dun,
dun, yeah, that music swells. He was told, we'll drop you on three. And they dropped him on one. So he wasn't ready.
But his... And you look at his face, right? Because I remember seeing a doco about this going, hey, you know, you get we did this trick till you get the real... on the actor's face, right? He actually kind of looks kind of stupid. I actually thought
looks,
I'm like,
he looks terrified,
no,
Paul Blart.
He is terrified, but it's really genuine. And it's like, oh my God, that poor guy is almost cross-eyed.
That's
in
right.
slow motion. Yeah. So I remember going, wow, he was cool. It was definitely cool. That was a great way to off him as well. Also, he Absolutely. Would have been able to get a shot off, I reckon. Because he brought the gun up
no
and then
way.
He dropped.
No way.
He
Can you imagine how fast that happens in real life? Gravity's a bitch.
Yeah. But if you're Hans Gruber going, you can't blam, 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 blam on the way down. You know what I mean?
Again, I think you've seen too many action films.
You're right. You'd be surely upset.
There should be, Mythbusters not around anymore, but if it was, that would be a great one to do. How would they even test that? Because Wayne reckons it would be no problem to shoot accurately as you're falling.
As the watch gives way, you see him looking into the camera and his gun is almost at level. So he would...
Even still.
I know. You'd have to think about firing as opposed to, I'm about to plummet to my death.
Yeah. I don't think you're thinking clearly at
you're
all.
You're probably not. I think... no, that's great.
The other scene I love is obviously when he kills, what's his name's brother? Carl's brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Up the top. And then, you know, he puts, Yeah, now I have a machine gun.
That's
too.
All good. That's all great. Great.
And then the scene where the guy's busting on him and he's shooting through the bottom of the huge long conference table.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, next time you have a chance to kill someone, take it.
Blam, 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 blam. He goes underneath. Thanks for the advice.
Yeah. And I just love the way it's a really iconic kind of shot. It's up against his chest because there's no room to aim it. Turns his face slightly, fires it. That moment personifies the entire film for me. Had that guy's bullets not run out.
Oh, yeah.
At that moment in time, had he not been so convinced he was going to kill him and he'd taken it more serious and just jumped off and strafed him,
yeah,
John would be dead.
That's right.
But it was all these things that came together in that moment.
No, but then
he shoots really well. I mean, yes. he judges it perfectly and
also,
rings the guy,
but then he gets to do the action hero line at the end.
Yep.
Thanks for the advice. You got to say something, man. Yep. You got to say something. Yep.
And as we know, Wayne lives his life by an action hero. So pretty much everything he does is ends with some kind of quip.
I sometimes engineer those situations just so I can use the line. Who flipped that car?
It's such a classic film. It's almost hard to talk about because it's been talked about in such detail by everybody else at some point. And us as well on the regular show. Die Hard comes up quite a bit in our lists. And
Do you think the show has a message, Paul, for anyone? Can you extract a message from this movie? It would have to be something like...
oh, geez, you're really trying hard here.
Yeah. You better get along with your wife because you might die one day. And nope, don't think so either. No, you're right. The message of the movie is glad that you were young enough to see this movie when you did because it wouldn't play now.
If you've not seen it at the cinema, this is one of those films which would absolutely hold up. It's largely practical effects.
Because you know every frame, that's why. You're sitting there going, oh yeah. Here
like we're in a world at the moment where lots of classic films are playing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you haven't, go and see this one at the cinema. I was lucky enough to see it at the cinema when I was 13, give or take.
Did you?
Yep.
I don't think I did. Wow, nice one.
It was a big day. It was awesome and just fell in love with this movie at that particular point in time.
Would you go to a Die Hard quintilogy or whatever?
Yeah, I'd go and I'd walk out after
you walk it up to three, would you? Okay, yeah, three, yeah.
I'd be done. I wouldn't bother with Live Free or Die Hard.
You know what the problem with Live Free or Die Hard was? It was written that Lynn Wiseman did that, right?
It was PG-13. That's a problem with
it. Yeah, that. But all his movies are blue. They're really blue. It's weird. Lynn Wiseman did like Underworld and all the...
And the Total Recall remake.
I know. I'm like, dude, could you use a different lens or filter or something? You fuck. This is shit. Anyway. Okay. Yes.
All right. Well, let's give it a score then. And prepare yourself. It's going to be high. I haven't even mentioned, you know, my favorite line of all, which I still use. Two of them in the film.
Yeah.
Shut it down now.
By the way, yes. Paul used to do that a lot.
Still does if I get the opportunity.
I know you do. Yes.
And I was in junior high.
Dickhead. Oh, we haven't talked about that. The two FBI agents.
Johnson and Johnson.
Johnson.
No relation. One's a white dude, one's African American.
Yeah, and the white dude is Sanchez from fucking The Living Daylights or whatever.
Yeah, Robert Darby.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That was funny. Junior high, dickhead. We all say that shit still, man. It means nothing, but it's hilarious.
Well, it just means that I'm younger than that, you idiot.
I know. But like for us in terms of like, if you just say that in public, people go, what the fuck are you talking about?
I have a chat with some mates where when someone says something and it just dies in the ass, it's not funny. Someone just puts the gif up with that. I was in junior high, dickhead.
Where were we before gifs? Anyway.
I don't know how we communicated.
I don't know either.
Anyway, all right. Final thoughts then about Die Hard, Wayne, and your score, sir.
This is the movie, one of the movies of my youth.
Yep.
Hence it will get a good 95.
Oh, well, on that, with the Al Leong bonus, I'm also giving it 95.
Wow.
It is, as far as I'm concerned, the finest action film, pure action film ever made.
Oh, really?
Yep.
This is a huge call. Holy shit, son.
Stands up. Every time I put this movie on, I'm never bored. I would watch this. It's also the finest Christmas film ever made.
I remember the argument.
Just a way into that argument yet again.
Well, I remember hearing someone's dad say that the reason this movie was good is because Bruce Willis was so relatable. Yeah, and that's what that was his
every,
whole thing.
Isn't every person?
Yeah. No, I get it. Okay,
and,
cool.
And so is Bonnie Bedelia. Bad hair aside, you know, she's not she's not a superstar looking woman. She's very successful
in her
career.
No, but in the
80s
it was all like that, Margot.
Good on
Kennedy.
Her. But they're all regular people.
Yeah. In 80s,
other than Hans, who is superhuman intelligent.
That's right. No, in the 80s, it was moms were big. Moms were big. Margot Kidder, you know. You don't necessarily get, like, women look like that. Bad hair.
I don't know.
I'm telling you, man.
Terrible.
If you go back,
I know they had big hair.
No, it's not big. It's just bad. It's just bad. Jesus.
Yeah, big and bad. There you go.
Man, I saw a girl with crimps the other day. Woman, what are you doing?
I
anyway,
don't know what you're talking
sorry,
about.
So forget it. Forget it. All right, go ahead.
That's our final thoughts. Crimps. Let's go out that one. What a successful podcast is one of these. What do you think of Die Hard? Is there anyone out there who doesn't like us? Let us know if you don't, because we just assume everyone else loves it the way that we do.
Or tell us how much you do love it. You know?
Yeah, that too. And you can do so via Twitter at the Countdown PC, on Gmail, countdownpodcast@gmail.com. On Podbean, where we host the show, you can leave comments and like the show there. Facebook is the community where we spend most of our time interacting with the awesome fans and listeners of the show. And finally, ccradio.com.au is where we host the show in Australia with some other great Aussie podcasts. That's it from us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard in celebration of Die Hard.
Vindication!
For the greatest action film ever made.
Whatever.
We'll catch you next time.